This is The Guardian.
Boston in Lincolnshire has become almost synonymous with Brexit and people unhappy about immigration from Eastern Europe. So it's probably no surprise that Reform UK's chairman Richard Tice is putting loads of resources into winning the local seat.
I can fix things on behalf of these residents. And here's the other thing. I work harder than anybody.
But Boston is a complex place. And after years of promises, people are feeling pretty uninspired by politics and politicians.
Yeah, but one's for the other, isn't it? It's all the same.
I think they're all a load of liars. All they're supposed to do, they don't.
Can Reform do the unthinkable and overturn the Tory majority? Or will they simply split the right-wing vote and allow Labour to win? I'm John Harris, and you're listening to Politics Weekly UK for The Guardian.
We're on new crop. So
you're opening this huge door. In we go into this.
We've got three stores left, so we've got about 450 tons
like
in
Raiders
each store.
This is like Raiders of the Lost Ark, only it's crates of Solaria. Yeah. It's a very hot Monday morning, and I've returned to Jack Buck Farms in Lincolnshire. They grow celeriac, the ugly vegetable here, and Julian, the farm manager, is showing me around.
Well, we've got about 1,300 boxes left.
I can't even do the maths.
A million heads, I would have said.
What, a million celeriac?
If I've got the maths right, yeah.
We have to make it clear that such is the volume of celeriac produced here. If you buy celeriac in a British supermarket, and you look, because there will be a little label on it, It will say Jack Buck Farms mostly, won't it?
Yeah, it will.
Okay.
Yeah, and that would be everyone from M&S, Tesco, Aldi, the lot.
The agricultural industry is the backbone of this area's economy. But with unprecedented rainfall this year, eye-watering inflation and Brexit, it's not been an easy few years for farming.
The bit we all remember was that first spring for us on daffodil harvest, straight after Brexit, because the whole industry was desperately short. And we
after
were
after the referendum?
No, after actual Brexit, yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing happened really between the referendum and actually Brexiting, apart from a lot of our staff from Eastern Europe were, you could say, deeply insulted by the result. Why do you not want us in your country? We've come here to work. We thought we were really wanted. They were really upset. It was such a kick in the teeth. We have a huge requirement for daffodil labour to harvest the crop. You know, we employ 80 people who are settled status, who live in Boston, so they were fine. But the problem was the people who come over just for the season, for the 2 to 3 month season, although they were technically able to, they chose not to. Because there was also the complication of COVID, of course, as well.
So you were throwing daffodils away?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a really tricky spring.
So that's about labour.
Yeah.
Now, just tell me about the other side of your business apart from labour, which is selling what you grow. How has Brexit changed that?
Because we're supplying a finite market into the UK, and we may have too much, we may not have enough. We don't know. We used to find it very easy to put the excess on a lorry and send it to Holland, because we know a lot of celeriac traders in Holland. And we'd get to this stage of the season, if we looked like we had too much, we could just literally wash it, put it on a lorry with a delivery note and book the transport and go. No paperwork, no phytosanitary inspections, no customs, no clearance, no issues whatsoever. Now, I exported 20 lorry loads last season, and I don't think I'm exaggerating, I spent a whole day on the first load trying to get the paperwork right. It wasn't easy, it wasn't fun. So I think now we're looking at a cost of almost £400 to £500 per lorry load.
And pre-Brexit the cost was zero of all that.
Yeah, it was zero.
But let me ask you in a very blunt way, any benefits of Brexit at all?
Not to our business, no. But we didn't really support Brexit's business because we knew it would frustrate our trade.
But doing what you do now costs more to do, and it's much more complicated.
Yeah. But then the Ukraine war walloped us with fuel. So our tractor diesel shot up, fertilizer shot up. When you're hit with that much inflation, it is frightening. And when it hammers your profits as hard as it did, you do wonder what you're doing. Well, we saw 20% of the potato growers give up over a two-year period.
That's what I was going to ask you, whether you knew anyone who just stopped.
Yeah. I mean, people have stopped farming. They've sold up. We cut down a lot. I mean, I've done this job for 29 years, and I've never seen 20% of the industry walk in two seasons.
And just to be clear, that's like this perfect storm. It's a mixture of the effects of Brexit, the war in Ukraine, what that triggered, inflation, all of it happening together has spelled this acutely difficult period for what you do.
I'm sure it won't go extinct, but once you lose that production capacity, it's very difficult to get it back.
The vision that you hear from Conservative politicians and Reform UK politicians, politicians on the right, this idea that somehow there's a pool of British labour that maybe needs a bit of help getting back to work, you know, but you can make it happen and sooner or later there'll be British people working on the fields again. What do you make of that?
Well, they're very naive. 28 years ago, when I started, we were probably 90-95% Boston, what we call Boston lads. And that has changed dramatically. So I think this year in our daffodil field, there was one Brit called John. Anyone can come and work in our fields. We never told people not to come.
Yeah, yeah.
They stopped coming. Right. Let's get that clear.
Yeah, yeah. But also, yeah. Correct me if I'm wrong, the local rate of unemployment does not suggest a great lump of labour that you could somehow access a British people.
I don't know the exact figure, but we're incredibly low around here. There's every pack house in this area, sort of South Lincolnshire, is advertising for staff. So there is, you know, there's a shortage of staff. We know there is.
There were a couple of reasons, I think, why migration from Central Eastern Europe to this part of England became a huge issue for some people. One was the sort of size and speed of this big social change, right? I mean, a lot of people arrived here and put down roots and so on. But it happened, crucially, against the backdrop of austerity, right? And the fact that, you know, all the usual things, schools and hospitals, roads and infrastructure and public transport and all that, was all stretched, even without having to help even more people. Housing particularly, you know, if you're in a situation where everybody's competing for housing, then sometimes migration becomes this highly sort of polarised, toxic issue, when what you're really looking at underneath it all is the fact that there's starting of houses. I really got that sense coming here repeatedly down the years. It was impossible to disentangle immigration, in other words, from these really big questions about how poorly funded public services were. You just couldn't separate the two. And yet, Nigel Farage and Richard Tyson, their ilk, do exactly that. They say, oh, you know, implicitly, it's like, well, never mind all that stuff about how much the government spends on public services. The problem is immigration with a capital I. And that's just not true. We're now making our way into Boston, where a lot of people from Central and Eastern Europe have settled. And we're going to meet Igor, who's a sort of long-standing pillar, it's fair to say, of the Polish community here.
He came when he was 10, 11.
It's his home, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah. For him, it's home. He, even if I speak to him in Polish, he would respond in English.
Okay. Igor, I last met you in the summer of 2018, 6 years ago, which was 2 years after the Brexit referendum. How do you think life has changed, A, for you, and B, for Polish people in Boston since then?
It just got frustrating and annoying. No, it's very difficult to say what has changed and how it's changed. It's so much more formalities we have to do in order to do the simplest everyday tasks, like renting a flat or visiting our families or allowing our families to come here. For whatever you do, you need to go through extra hoops.
What was your sense, or what is your sense, of how many Polish people went back to Poland in the sort of 4 or 5, 6, 7 years after the referendum?
I didn't expect that it's going to be so many. I would go as far as 20%.
And why have you stayed?
For many Polish people, home is Poland. For me, home is Boston. I'm home. Where would I go?
When I met you in 2018, you told me that immediately after the referendum, for a time, some aspects of life for Polish people here had got difficult, that you'd heard about people getting bricks through their windows and maybe being shouted at in the street and so on. That was real, wasn't it?
It was. Unfortunately, it was very real. I don't want to defend anyone by anybody's standards, but I can understand frustration. So if you've been promised that foreigners will disappear and NHS will be thriving and everything's going to be totally different, and all of a sudden you're waking up after the referendum and after the Brexit and nothing has changed, you are looking for something you can blame on. We are easy target.
Okay, and how is it now?
I think we are lesser evil. We are lesser evil for English people in here. So now I'm finding very many in weird conversations in town. People are addressing the newcomers from new European countries, new EU countries, and saying, well, they are different because Polish people came. Polish people have been working hard. They've been polite. They've been nice. And those new guys, now they are the enemy.
And that's people from what, Romania and Bulgaria?
I think so, yeah. Really? Yeah. But they are different. They have just different, I don't even know how to say it. They have a different temperament. I don't know
where
I'm going.
Do you think the story will go on and they'll settle in, some of them will settle in Boston?
No.
You don't?
No, absolutely not. They will not settle in Boston. They will come, see how much they can achieve, what they can get. They are not trying. This is the thing. And it was the same with...
But you sound like a British person moaning about Polish people.
God, yes, I know. I'm sorry. But this is how it is. If you're not trying to be part of the system, if you're not trying to be part of the community... You're not planning to stay, are you?
Thank you. And all the best with it. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Brilliant.
See you soon.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Human beings are sort of funny, complicated, confounding creatures, aren't they? When I first came here 10 years ago, some people in the town were getting very irate about Polish people. And now you turn up and the Polish people are a bit unsettled by the arrivals of the Romanians and Bulgarians. The world changes, I suppose. People take time to adjust, but it's like the cycle is endless. We were going to meet Richard Tice, the until recently leader of Reform UK and the candidate for Boston and Skegness, in a carvery of a pub in the middle of Boston, the town. But we just got a last minute message saying that, along with the former Tory minister, she was a minister, I think, Anne Widdicombe, he's doing a little day long mini tour of local village halls, one of which is in the village of Swineshead. And that's where we're going, to meet him and maybe her. Richard Tice, I presume. John Harris from The Guardian.
Oh, hello. How are you?
Nice to meet you. Why have you chosen Boston and Skegness? In the past, you've run in Old Bexley and Sidcup and Hartlepool for Parliament. Why here?
Because it's a very strong Brexit seat and it's been abandoned by this Conservative government and its own MP, who, of course, was a Remainer. And he voted for all the things that, frankly, has made Boston and Skegness suffer. People are feeling poorer in this constituency. Okay. People's quality of life has reduced. It's suffering. And frankly, it's typical of any safe Conservative seat where the MP's been complacent and not a proper job.
Okay. It's also a place, I've been here a few times down the years, where there are a lot of tensions and anxieties about immigration, some of which have quite complex and deep roots in the sort of economy we have here. And it's quite easy for you to pitch up with all your money and resources and sort of capitalise on those things.
Here comes the taxi. In the taxi is Anne Widdicombe,
all right,
with our speaker, old school campaigning.
Erstwhile Strictly contestant. So it's easy for you to pitch up in places like
actually,
this and make hay with people's resentments, right?
No, what's important is that actually a constituency like Boston and Skegness has a national voice shouting from the ramparts in Westminster, doing a good job, as opposed to, frankly, just having a yes man or woman just doing what the main big party says. And that's what they've had to date, and that's why this constituency's been let down. That's why, actually, it's right to have someone who's going to hold them to account.
We spoke to someone from the Polish community who I've met before, who said that immediately after the Brexit referendum, she was aware of Polish people being attacked and shouted at in the street and bricks through people's windows. You've come here talking about net zero immigration. I've seen your Twitter feed. Today you're talking about literature that comes with postal votes in non-English languages and so on. It plays on those sort of prejudices and resentment. It definitely does. Do you worry about what you leave behind if you lose here, that those tensions
it's
will
exactly
increase?
The opposite. It's about having the courage to talk about what is of real concerns to the vast majority of constituents in this constituency.
Even if it leaves some of them feeling anxious?
It doesn't. Actually,
I just met one.
I'm literally telling you, because I knock on more doors than any major political figure, right? Everybody is concerned about mass immigration that no one voted for, that's making people poorer, that's depressing British wages, and that's adding unsustainable pressure on housing rents that's up 20% over the last couple of years, on public health, on health services, for example. So these are the real issues that affect real people, as opposed to the metropolitan liberal class,
right,
who have no idea what's going on out in the real world. That's what's happening, and that's why people are so delighted that someone like me is going to stand up for them and their genuine concerns.
We spent this morning at a farm not far from here where they grow celeriac and daffodils, and because of Brexit, they've had a terrible time of it, okay? Their exports have crashed. It's so complicated now trading with Europe. Buying things like tractors for the farm is immeasurably more complicated than it used to be, and early on, they had problems with labour.
Early on?
With labour, with the smaller workers, right?
So let's
and they're only okay for workers because there's a settled Eastern European community here. It's not British people working for them mostly, right? What do you say to them? They might be your constituents, people like that, soon.
I'll tell you exactly what I say to them. How did it work in the 80s and 90s? We had a seasonal agricultural worker scheme. We had a settled labour market with almost pretty much a tiny bit of net immigration.
Right. What about trading with Europe? But that's important.
If you're going to ask me a question,
okay,
do me the courtesy of letting me answer, right?
Okay, go on.
In the 80s and 90s, we had almost net zero immigration, and guess what? British workers were being paid a fair wage, and if the farmers couldn't afford the cost of the labour, there's two options, right? You either pay higher wages or you invest in capital equipment to replace the labour. That's literally how basic economics works. It's A-level economics. What's happened is, since freedom of movement, there's no real wage growth in the last 15 years. No need to train local people, right? So you avoid all that training cost. No need to invest in capital equipment, which is why we've got a productivity crisis.
He's looking at capital equipment, but he's having a hell of a problem sourcing it in Europe because of all the bureaucracy and paperwork because of Brexit, which you supported.
A lot of the capital equipment is bought from America or elsewhere in the world.
It's bought from Europe. You can't lecture people in that. You have to listen to them. Surely you do.
I'm listening to everybody, right? But I'm telling you how basic economics works. And look, fundamentally, what's happened across the whole of big business has become addicted to...
He's not big business. He's a small family firm who grows celeriac. He's not a big business. You say you want to be on the side of small business.
Absolutely.
He's had a torrid time because of Brexit.
Do you know one of the big issues for farmers?
Yeah.
The cost of energy.
Oh,
the cost of fuel.
He talks about that.
Right, exactly.
Sure.
Right, which is all the cost of net zero that you lot in the metropolitan liberal class are obsessed by. Right? Net zero is a catastrophe. It's an absolute catastrophe for this country. One of the things about Brexit is that our exports now have actually risen.
His haven't, right?
Hang on.
And he's like lots and lots of people in this position that I've spoken to. They are mired in red tape.
What about...
They are mired in red tape. You're a free marketeer. They are mired in red tape.
There's only a point in having an interview. If you ask me a question, let me answer it.
I'm telling you, they're mired in red tape.
If you're going to let me go through a third of the sentence and then attack me again, then we might as well...
I'm not attacking you. I'm just raising what this farmer said. I'm not attacking you.
We're going to terminate the interview because you're not letting me answer the question.
All right, answer the question.
Right? Let me answer the question. Otherwise, it's terminato.
Okay.
All right?
Is that Latin?
End of. Finished.
Okay.
Okay?
Keep going.
The point about Brexit is you're in control of your own destiny.
So that
when you make mistakes, you can say, actually, these people are messed it up, the Conservative Party. People in Reform understand Brexit.
Yeah.
They're going to sort it out. Get them into Parliament. Shout from the rooftops. People who know what they're talking about, we can help sort it out. This is a journey, okay? And we're on that journey. We will be the opposition that takes on the Labour Party in 28, 29.
Thank you very much.
Lovely.
Thank you.
Nice to see you.
Great. So you've got three of these today?
Three of these today. Yep, we've done one in Tilsey. This is number two. And then we're in Skegness this evening.
Reform UK aren't alone in this. It's happened with some of the more high-profile independent candidates that I've met who've got different politics somewhat from Reform. But they talk this language of sort of sweeping solutions. And there are easy answers, you know. We've just got to look a bit more closely or... or think a bit hard, or listen to us. And the point is, this is one of the most complicated places I've ever been in all my time as a political journalist. It's so complicated. You've got all of this stuff tangled together about
austerity in public services and housing and the job market and the food economy and regional inequality and all of this. It's really, really hard, right? It's confoundingly difficult. And what an image, you know. A Reform UK taxi rolls up and out gets Anne Widdecombe from yesteryear, you know, and just says it's all about common sense. It's quite attractive, well-packaged, you know, cynically clever snake oil, but it's still snake oil. And you know one thing that all politicians, right, or would-be politicians, you know what a good politician does? They listen. And I don't think they're minded to listen to anyone but themselves. Boston or around Boston?
I live at Wibberton.
Can I ask you a quick question?
You can ask a quick question.
How's Boston doing?
Sadly.
We're in Boston town centre, right by the huge Gothic church that towers over the market square. But today, this market town feels neglected. These two women we met, who didn't want to share their names, agreed.
We used to have a beautiful store there, Aldred's downtown. They closed after the pandemic. Another shop opened up, it died a death.
Last 12 months.
Okay, here's a question. Do you know about Reform UK? They fancy their chances here.
My husband just voted for that.
You know why?
Politics and me don't mix. I think they're all a load of liars. All they're supposed to do, they don't.
Well, not always.
Have you seen our roads?
Oh, no, that's because the government cut all the money that goes to the council.
It's the government, isn't it? At the end of the day, it is the government.
Whoever you vote for, you get the government.
Then it is the government at fault all the way along.
Yeah, but we got the NHS once and better state education and child benefit and all that.
Yeah, but where is it now? What condition is it in now?
It's all in a terrible mess.
And who's at fault?
The Conservative Party.
No, you can't blame the Conservative...
They've been running the country for 14 years.
I know, but they came into an empty purse, didn't they? You know yourself, it was always the Labour Party that left the government broke.
Well, they left the country in a better state. We had new schools and hospitals then. I think it's complicated.
Government. Were you for or against Brexit?
Against. What about you?
I was for.
Why?
Because of what we've got now. I really do think we'd be better off if we was left alone, independent... We became self-sufficient. It happened once and it can happen again.
We did have.
We're not allowed to be British anymore. We're not allowed to fly.
Who stopped you being British?
The Woke Brigade. Well, oh, come
on. Someone told you to stop. Seriously, though. Has someone told you to stop flying the flag?
Yes.
Who's told you to stop flying the flag?
Well, you read about it all the time.
No one stops you flying the flag. My town's full of them on D-Day. There was Union Jacks everywhere. The reason I push back... I'm not judging anybody, really, or trying not to. The reason I push back on people saying you're not allowed to say you're British anymore and wasn't the country so much better when we weren't in the European Union and all that is because, well, it's not true, but I can see why people have this sort of romanticised vision of the past and the idea that the present ain't helping them. Because it's like a sort of garbled echo of what's actually real, which is that this is Boston's High Street, and look at it. There's a massive empty old mobile phone shop. That, I think, used to be the local department store. And it wasn't just a Debenhams or a British Home Stores or whatever. That was a local business, right? And the heart goes out of places, and then people think, well, the past was better than the present, right?
No market.
No hardly any market, hardly any shops. It used to be lovely. It used to always be busy. Not now.
Okay. How do you feel about the election?
I took no notice of that, mate. They're all as bad as one another.
Are you going to vote?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love a vote. Probably Labour. Give them a chance.
Tell me why.
Well, we've been under Conservative now for so many years.
14?
Yeah.
Long years.
And they haven't really done much, have they, really?
That's interesting. What about you?
UK Reform.
Well, why are you going to vote for Reform?
I don't know. Just not Labour or Conservative, are they?
But are there things you picked up about Reform that you like?
Someone different, see what they can do.
But do you vote Reform in the hope that somehow things will get better?
Yeah.
Hopefully, yeah.
Like what?
See a bit of stability in the country for
a
change.
I can't say what I want to say.
Right, I know what you mean.
It's not just Boston. It's everywhere.
Zero immigration, they say.
This isn't Britain anymore. It's a multicultural country now.
And you, and tell me why you don't like that or you worry about it.
Work.
Do you work?
He can't get a job at the minute.
Oh, he used to, but not anymore.
What did you used to
Recycling.
Do?
Recycling.
Recycling?
Yeah.
What, and you're looking for work and it's not there?
Yeah, it's not there anymore.
God. That's hard, right?
Yeah, very hard. Especially after 11 years.
You've been looking for work for 11 years?
No, I've been in work for 11
years. You've been
in work for 11
years.
Yeah.
When did you,
doing the same job.
When did you lose your job?
About 6 months ago.
Something like that. 7 months ago.
And you're applying and going for interviews everyone. And all?
Everyone. I'm applying for everything. Nothing.
God, you have my sympathies there. That's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah,
that's horrible.
I know a lot of people that can't get work.
There's quite a few people who can't get work.
You've got a somewhat unique economy here, haven't you, in Boston? In the sense that you're either working in the food industry or there's very little to find,
yeah.
Right? You're nodding. That's an issue.
That's all there is around here, really, is
and
food.
And you don't want to work... No. Night shifts or 10 hours, 10 days on, 10 days off. Or,
four on, four off. And
he's getting too old for
you don't fancy picking
no.
daffodils for peace.
Oh, no.
That's why there's Europeans here, though, because they'll do it.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Someone's got to do it.
Yeah.
There are some encounters we've had today that you won't hear... Because people have said, oh, I don't want you to use that. But there's a turn of phrase that people use a lot. They go, yeah, I have got opinions, but I'd rather not say. Or, you know what I'm talking about. And what they mean is immigration. And because people are aware and alert to what vox pops, certainly from outlets like The Guardian are, they want to leave it well alone. But there's a lot of it here. And it's unsettling. It's really unsettling. But that's the reason Richard Tice has pitched up. Because I wish people didn't feel like that, and I think people are wrong to feel like that. Sometimes there is context, you know. And that guy is a little bit older than me, and he's been looking for work for 6 months and he can't find any. And that inevitably is going to colour his opinion of what kind of country this is and the makeup of its population and all that. And it's hard, but I guess sometimes you have to... Imagine yourself walking a mile in someone else's shoes. Not everybody, just some people. The current MP for Boston and Skegness is Matt Warman, who, with a hefty majority of over 25,000, would normally be considered pretty safe. He's seen off a challenge from UKIP in the past, but how are things going for him this time?
So this time feels... both very similar and very different, right? In the sense that there are people who are promising you the earth and telling you it's easy, and it's simply not true. And that is an uphill battle in 2024 in a way that it was also in 2015.
Okay, so you've been the MP here for 9 years. And whenever I come here, it's obviously got huge amounts of potential and this immense sort of rich history, which you can see where we're sitting, you know, outside this huge church, which by rights should be called a minster or an abbey or something, right? And all of this quite European-looking architecture, you know, looks sort of Dutch or Belgian. It speaks about the trading history of Boston and all that. So all that is to admire. But the place often feels tense. A lot of people here live quite close to the edge economically, right? The economy here, the food economy, sometimes is about precarious jobs and low pay and all those things, right? Do you feel sometimes as if you're trying to sort of keep a lid on furies and frustrations?
If I'm honest, on the one hand, some of my frustration over the years has been a tendency to overstate how tense that is.
Well, if on the part of people like me, the media, types.
But bluntly, yes. Right. But on the other hand, there's a reason why we're investing in community cohesion. There's a reason why we're investing in levelling up. There's a reason why we're investing a whole load of stuff that tackles some of those sources of tension. So I'm not denying for a second that these are real problems, but I'm also saying it's important to keep them in perspective.
But does it feel like... I'm putting words in your mouth now, because it feels like this to me, is if Richard Tice hits town and tries to capitalise on all those tensions and resentments and frustrations. That's his game.
100%. Exactly. And I think the responsible thing for any politician to do should be to say, look, I absolutely acknowledge why people feel left behind. There's a reason why we are spending more money in this constituency on what's sort of broadly badged as levelling up than we are on any other equivalent place in the country. But the responsible thing cannot be to whip that up in a way that makes people feel that there are problems that are somehow insurmountable unless you adopt these incredibly broad brush black and white solutions, because all that will do is lead to greater disappointment.
Okay. But some of your very high profile Conservative colleagues look at Reform UK and they say, we want him inside the Tory party. They want Nigel Farage to rise to the top of conservatism really quickly. They think that's what's making your life difficult, they think, is the answer.
So I think they are right to say that the issues that Reform are talking about are the ones that the Conservative Party should be unashamed about talking about. Where I think they're wrong is in saying either the individuals who have devoted their lives to taking votes away from the Tory Party should somehow be inside it, and where I think they're wrong is that is this idea that those solutions are available. Like, I don't imagine for a second that Suella Braverman or Priti Patel were uncommitted to getting illegal migration down. They just weren't able to do it for a whole host of complex reasons. Nigel Farage pretends that those complex reasons exist and it will leave people disappointed, and that's my frustration.
But what's your feeling about that idea that Nigel Farage should join the Conservative Party?
I think someone who is gleeful in the Conservative Party's destruction shouldn't be in it. But I do think that is not the same thing as saying that we should ignore what he's talking about in every single way.
Tell me about the sort of less high-profile, less glamorous, perhaps, life you lead as an MP in terms of your casework and so on.
So one of the things I've been talking about in the campaign is, look, if you want someone who is local, if you want someone who is able to continue to help the 10,000 constituents that we've helped since I was elected, slightly more than that, then you need to understand what the real issues are. And yes, immigration is a part of that casework, but it is a relatively small part. What people want to talk to me about more often than not is it's the NHS, it's dentists, it's broadband, it's potholes. That's part of why I've been talking so much about being interested in the local issues that really make a difference to people's lives, rather than using this place as a platform.
Well, far be it from me to pick up Conservative candidates. Feels weird doing that, doesn't it? But to some extent, he is sort of holding the line against this irrational, social media-driven, stupidly simplistic sort of politics. It'd just be interesting to see if he can do it. And just to be clear as well, there are more than two variables in this election locally. It's not just the Conservatives and Reform UK. The Labour Party, it is said, fancies its chances here as well. So I think it's going to be a fascinating seat to watch this. I have to be honest with you. Before we went to Boston, it seemed like a two-horse race. But returning from our trip, we couldn't shake off the feeling that Labour was on the lips of quite a few people we spoke to. So we wanted to speak to Labour's candidate, Alex Forbert.
Barking. Apologies.
Don't worry.
Once her dog stopped barking.
Just back from the vets. That was
okay.
Can you hear that okay? I was born and brought up here in Boston on an estate called Fenside, like my parents and my grandparents before me. I know the constituency like the back of my hand. My family sometimes during the summer months went up to Ingham's as well to run a fish and chip shop just so that we could earn a bit more money as a family. Back in the 70s, you know, it was pretty tough going, you know, for families over here. So I know the constituency like the back of my hand. I know the communities like the back of my hand. And I also want to bring change.
I can tell you're absolutely steeped in the place.
I am.
But I can also tell that you are distinguishing yourself perhaps from at least one other candidate who seems to have only just arrived in Boston and Skegness, right? That's a major point of difference, that you know what you're talking about.
I do. I mean, you know, Richard Tice, our campaign styles are very, very different. I'm 100% knocking on the doors, you know, amongst the people, championing their views. Actually, nobody mentions Richard Tice, the name Richard Tice, on the doorsteps. They talk about Nigel Farage. You know, they know, we know, the community knows that Richard Tice is a very wealthy man. He's based in London. If I'm honest, he's seen as Boston and Skegness's biggest tourist. You know, he arrives in a bus or he arrives in a taxi and then he's ready to go again. And that's literally what people believe. They don't believe that he's going to spend a great deal of time in the constituency here at all, dealing with the real problems that people face, not just for themselves, but for their children. We're still fighting hard in Boston. There is a huge Labour vote there and we are battling. We're a very small team. This really is a David and Goliath, you know, tale. It's a very small Labour Party team, but they have the, you know, the hearts of lions. We are fighting really hard, trying to build cohesion in the community.
When we've been in the constituency and in Boston in particular, I met people who said they were going to vote Labour, but they didn't say it with much enthusiasm. They said it because they wanted to get the government out, and it wasn't like a ringing positive endorsement of the Labour Party, right? You must have picked that up.
Yeah, absolutely. When I knock on doors, I am coming across long-standing Conservative voters. Please remember, this has been a safe Conservative seat for very, very many years. And it was very early on in the campaign, it was very clear to me that this Conservative vote was completely collapsing. It actually felt very much like the Selby by-election, where I was campaigning with the party up in Selby with Keir Mather. And, you know, I'm having conversations with lifelong Conservative voters who are, you know, wringing their hands in despair.
Okay, you've got a lot to say, but you haven't shown up at several of the hustings. You said one was because you were working. But if you're really fighting for this seat, shouldn't you make time for those? It perhaps doesn't send a great message about Labour's intentions in Boston.
You know, as I said at the beginning, you know, I campaign my way. And, you know, it's true. I've been at work. I haven't been able to make it. I am a working mum. I still am teaching on a Wednesday, for example. But it's not just that. Again, I go on the doorsteps and I listen to people and they don't want to see that. Generally,
you know, they
don't want to see people arguing, for example, on the pier. So when they Richard Tice and Matt Warman, you know, like two schoolboys, were having this kind of bickering argument on the end of Skegness Pier, that did not go down well on the doorsteps. You know, I was listening to people's views, thinking it turns people off. They don't want to see that. They have far more pressing and serious issues to be concerned with.
As you will know, in Boston in particular, immigration has long been a sort of sensitive, sometimes tense issue. People talk about it, right? That's been my experience of going to Boston from sort of 10 years ago or thereabouts, I think was the first time I visited. Labour arguably been pretty squeamish about speaking about that subject, for good or bad. When that subject comes up, what do you say?
Nigel Farage will say that this is an immigration election, and it really isn't. You know, certainly in Boston and Skegness, it does come up on the doorsteps, but it's the NHS that comes up first every time. You know, that is the major concern. Look, Labour's solution, I think, is the best option for Boston and Skegness. And I'm a huge fan of that three-word term, border security command. And the key word there.
Oh, yeah, but that's got nothing. Hold on a minute. That's got nothing to do with people coming from Bulgaria and Romania to work in local farms and food processing factories. That's a different issue.
Absolutely. Well, but Boston and Skegness have always needed, you know, migrant workers. You know, ever since I was small, we've needed migration to work on the land, or we've needed migration to work in our NHS or in our care workers or in, they, you know, running businesses.
And the fact that you are sort of happy about that and you take that as sort of the natural order of things now, what is part again of how you would distinguish yourself from Richard Tice and the Conservative Party, arguably?
Well, no, I don't think so, because I think there has to be more work on cohesion in the community. People are taking on board that kind of division rhetoric that we hear sometimes from Reform UK. But like we've said, you know, it does need to be discussed. I think previously voices in Boston and in Skegness haven't been heard on this matter. They haven't been listened to. And I've lived in the community, you know, during that. And we do have to talk about that. We have to be able to discuss it. We have to find a way of moving forward with that.
Thank you so much. Thanks to Julian and Robin at Jackbuck Farms and Eager for speaking to us. And thank you for listening. Next week, we'll be in Redcar in the northeast of England, and you'll be able to hear that episode on Wednesday ahead of polling day. Don't forget to tune in to Today in Focus's Election Extra for your regular updates on the campaigns every weekday. And Politics Weekly Westminster with Pippa Crerar and Kieran Stacey will be back on Monday. This episode was produced by Frankie Toby, the music is by Axel Cacoutier, and the executive producers are Maz Ebtahaj and Nicole Jackson.
This is The Guardian.